he asked her.
More town or the thing we are in Canada. Like, even just talking to see them a couple years ago, and just it's a natural look to me to it, just about.
Our request from the students that are across up there for a few years.
It's rich.
And then you need it.
Yeah.
They just said that, like, I don't.
Okay.
And we had to frame them, so.
Good. Thursday morning.
Thursday morning, we're good to go. We have the gift certificates.
We don't drive.
So are there a lot of folks that signed up for this?
There are six.
Where's the mud?
Okay, good.
One of my students.
What's bad?
Right.
What's bad?
No, I think it's good.
I wasn't saying bad, but I was trying to be bad. I wasn't trying to.
No, figured out. I'm just glad I called that. Not a bad response.
I just plugged the law school. And they generally apply in large numbers.
Dear friends.
Makes sense.
Great. How are you doing?
Be hit 4:30, so this seems like a natural place to start the meeting.
Absolutely.
All right. So with that, I will call the meeting to order. Hello, can you call the roll? Thank you.
Anderson?
Here.
Pataglia?
Present.
Bensel?
Here.
Cotman? Drews?
Here.
Fitch? Guido? Hatch?
Here.
Howard?
Here.
Kaufman?
Here.
Kim? Cruiser? Lowe?
Here.
Michael?
Here.
Quinn? Schott? Van Loan? Wigger?
Here.
Monarto?
Here.
All right, great. Thank you very much. So we have a new member. Alexa, would you care to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm a first-year PhD student in the field of microbiology, and I'm excited to join you guys.
Welcome.
Hey, great. Thanks for being here. Glad to have you at least until the end of this semester, which is quickly approaching. Okay, so the next item on the agenda is the call for late additions. Late additions. Matt?
I just wanted to note we actually have one of the SA candidates for UA because uncontested, he will be on the assembly, so I just wanted to welcome him to the assembly.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, provisionally, upon you not getting disqualified, welcome. Yeah. Yes.
Welcome to
yes,
the club.
Yeah, so welcome. All right, so with no other late additions, then we will just move right into the first business of the day. We'll do the meeting. Okay, so the first resolution is Resolution 9, reinstating the Budget Planning Committee. Again, I don't know if I assume people read their emails. We decided not to print anything to save paper, so hopefully everyone brought an electronic device upon which they can view the resolution while we discuss it. Although, I see some of you might not have done that, and that's okay if you've committed it to memory. Yeah.
What is the privilege? Is it possible to put the resolutions up on the display like we used to do?
I think it's possible.
I will figure it out.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, let's do it. That way no one has to have committed it to memory. Okay, while Elena, while you figure that out, we can start a discussion on this. Joe, would you like to reintroduce this?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've reached out to the provost's office, specifically Paul Streeter. And he shared the resolution with Provost Gottlikoff, and neither of them have any concerns. In addition, they are very willing to engage on the topic to really hammer out what the more specifics of this committee will go through. I am going to send an email through the listserv about the amendments that I'm going to make to it on Bob's request. And specifically, what I'm going to amend, I'm going to insert in subsection 5.41 that all members of this committee will abide by confidentiality in order to serve on it, so the administration feels a little bit more safe sharing information with them. And then I'm also going to amend the composition to what Bob's suggestion, because I do agree that 17 members was a bit too much. So we're going to cut it down to 7. Two presidential appointments, one from the SA, one from the GPSA, one from the EA, one from the Faculty Senate, and then the chair will be appointed by the University Assembly upon approval with the president of the university. So that would be the committee. I just sent them to the listserv so that you all can see them. But yeah, with the provost office kind of being saying yeah, this is really good, I think, you know, we should vote on it to send the formal proposal out with the amendments. Well, first, we have to vote on my motion to amend, which I just said.
Okay. So, Joe, you're making a motion to amend?
Yes.
I second that.
And okay, so if everyone can now pull up their emails and view the motion to amend, I feel like we should all take a moment and read this before we vote on it. Just, I think that's fair. So let's take 30 seconds and read over the email.
Thank you. I think this resolution was a good one. I think it's good to reinstate this committee. I remember reading when it was dissolved. I understood why it was all the time, but I think it's good to have more information from the community. I guess my question is looking at the term lengths and the total number of seats. And that,
yeah.
Thinking to my experience looking at something like student elected trustee where there are 2-year terms, because you have a 2-year term, you are in essence freezing entire classes of students out, because the odds of a freshman being able to get on this committee. I mean, as an undergrad, I was never able to run for student trustee because I was a transfer. As a professional student, it never worked because it never lined up with my term. And my concern is by making 2-year terms, you are in essence precluding entire classes of students from being able to serve on this, which I think is concerning. And it's also the thing is for the UA having it, the UA in essence has the chair, which is a 3-year term. But again, there is no way for the UA to send us a general delegate. So I think there's 2 questions here. 1, what are your thoughts on the term lengths and what's the reason behind that? And 2, I would personally like to increase it to 8 and make sure the UA also gets a standard seat as well, in addition to the chair.
So I like the expansion to 8. I think that would be fine. I think that's a quick thing. On the term lengths, I guess there's very, I mean, like, I'm in the same boat as you, can't run for trustee, whatever. I guess it was kind of just so, because I think 3-year, I think, you know, 3-year terms, or like there wasn't really a good way to term it out, I think, for the other assemblies, because 1 year seems too volatile for members to actually firmly make a difference. And then 3 years is like, I think, too long. 2 years is an unfortunate compromise, I think, of all of them, relating more specifically to the student assembly and graduate and professional student assembly. So I just think it's like, it's the best we got. It's not necessarily just, it's not, you know, any specific thing, but best we got.
So with that, actually, I'd motion to amend it, so amend the amendment so it would read that BPC shall consist of 8 members, 2 presidential appointments, and then 1 from the Faculty Senate, then comma, 1 from the University Assembly, comma, and the 2 sessions we're adding the number to 8 and then adding 1 from the University Assembly after 1 from the Faculty Senate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's been a motion to amend the amendment, the proposed amendment, so that we would change the number 7 in subpoint A, we would change that 7 to an 8. And then after the comma, after Faculty Senate, it would say, it would just say 1 from the University Assembly, and then it would say, and the chair will be appointed by the University Assembly with the approval by the president.
And C would also have to be, so C would be changed accordingly
right,
as well.
And C would be changed accordingly.
Can I get one, please?
So sure. So C would go the five members from the student assembly, granted, and after faculty senate, you do, or after employee assembly, do, no, pardon. Strike and after faculty senate, do and university assembly shall serve 2-year term.
So let's.
I can give it to you in writing if it make it easier for you.
Yeah. Does everyone get what we will be the what we'll be discussing while Matt drafts up the language for Terrell? No. Okay, I got a blank stare.
In essence, yeah. We're adding a seat. So the UA will send the chair, and then it's also one regular member. And the language changes are just changing all the language to make it clear that it's going from 7 to 8 members, and the UA will send the chair, and then one regular delegate.
Yeah. Okay. So then we'll move. Is there a second on that motion to amend?
Second.
There's a second. Okay, so we're now in discussion on that specific provision to change it to 8 and give the UA a regular 2-year member.
I think it's a good idea.
Okay. Does anyone else have any comments?
Call a question on that part to amend the amendment.
Second. Okay, there's a motion to call a question. There's a second. Is there any dissent calling the question on the amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, we will... is there any dissent to the amendment to this amendment? The amendment to the amendment? Is there any dissent to this? No? Okay, then it's approved. So we'll go back into discussion on the amendment in general. So we're now discussing just this general amendment regarding the membership. Does anyone else have comments or questions on it?
Just a question, and this is in terms of the confidentiality. In terms of the way the code is written, how would the confidential agreements be enforced? Because last year with the McBride hearing, the hearing board's denizens came down and said that the code does not currently say that violating a confidentiality agreement is a violation of the code. The CDC is looking at that. But in terms of looking at like a legal confidentiality agreement where if you violate it, there can be a legal proceeding against you, not just a campus judicial proceeding?
Can I kick it to you, Bao? Because this was your part. This is what you really wanted to see in it.
My idea to have it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't feel terribly strongly about it, but I thought the administration would want it.
No, I completely agree. I'm just noting that the way the code is currently written, there's a bit of a loophole.
And it made a huge mess, right?
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Yes.
So it's an ongoing issue.
Yeah. It's going to get solved eventually, so I'm fine with keeping it there.
I agree. And I just want to make sure we were aware of that.
Yeah.
Okay. So then, there's no one else on the speaker's list.
Motion to call
the
question.
Amendment.
Okay. On the amendment.
Second. Yeah. So there's a motion to call the question on the amendment. There's a second. Is there any dissent to calling the question on the amendment? Okay. Seeing no dissent to calling the question on the amendment, we will vote. If you are in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand or placard. Are opposed to the amendment? If you'd like to abstain. Okay, by a vote of 12-0-1, the amendment is approved, and we'll go back into discussion on the resolution in general. So are there any comments or questions on the resolution in general? Greg?
Quick question regarding the Last, 2009 when the Budget Planning Committee stopped. Between 2009 and now, what has been the mechanism for communication? And has it actually failed? If the provost and Mr. Streeter, mm-hmm. if the two of them are very willing and open to having this going forward, what's been the mechanism for communication these past 8 to 10 years?
So I'll just take that as a point of information, and then you can chime in.
Yeah,
I
haven't breaked down.
And you're probably more informed than I am.
So a number of years ago, once the committee went away, there was periodic reports. So there was David Scorton gave a couple town halls on the budget, especially during the recession, and even before he left, he gave Voodoo town halls on the budget in general. The general 10,000 foot overview of where the university is. When we had the provost here a couple of years ago, who went and gave us some detail about how does the general budget work, especially with the new budget model, and then also how that fits into the College of Business. So it's been kind of either the administration of its own volition volunteers it intermittently, or someone asks for it. So it's been generally, this committee, I think, looks like it's going to be a little deeper dive than just the here's the public information. I think it's also why adding confidentiality is important, because you want people to actually look deeper than just the, here's the 10,000 foot overview that we've been getting in the interim.
And there has been a committee of the faculty center, I believe that's right, Charlie? That has been.
Yes, it's the FNC. Yeah, I go to that. This is a real complex topic. And so it's loaded with, you know, people in economics who understand stuff. I'm not like that. I spent huge amounts of time just trying to understand this.
Right.
So I'm not sure what the message is. I think the message is we need regular people to understand this. But it's a very big, it'll take a lot of work.
Yeah, it is a lot of work. But this is an idea to move it beyond just communicating with the faculty.
Right. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, if I can add something. So I think that as far as I understand, the committee went defunct a little bit before it was even taken out of the charter. And so there were a series of committees that went defunct and then were removed from the charter, you know, after they were just kind of relics. And then this was one of them. In terms of what the communication mechanism has been, it's basically mostly been assemblies passing resolutions that are shots in the dark. For better or for worse, just like not, and then like hoping that the administration will like accept them. So there really hasn't been that much communication between the assemblies and between the administration. So that's, I think that, you know, the resolution is a way to potentially address that problem.
Right.
Yeah. Does anyone else want to speak?
Sorry, and just a quick question. Is this a bylaw amendment? So as for amending the bylaws, it goes into effect automatically. In theory, just we snap the fingers and the bylaws are amended because our charter gives us that authority. How are we going to ensure that the president, in essence, doesn't have concerns? Or because, and we can amend the bylaws unilaterally. How do we ensure that that's something that's amendable to the administration? Because in essence, it takes two to tango, so to speak. So we need to have their buy-in with us.
Okay, so Joe, do you want to answer that?
I think honestly, with the email correspondence, it doesn't seem like there's going to be any sort of like pushback. So I see like logistically, it's a weird kind of like one goes real quick and the other one is like when you send it, they'll be like, oh, okay. But since we have the email already, and since I don't think there's going to be any sort of that. If there is, then I think that comes in the amendment to take it back out or find a different, better middle ground, but I don't expect that happening.
Gina?
Just as a point of consideration for the other assemblies, because this is going to be appointing members from the constituent assemblies, some of them struggle right now to staff some of the committees they have, so perhaps do some outreach prior to committing to this, just to make sure that everybody's on board.
And I think it would also take the university assembly some time, just because like with the chair, because it's not like, yes, it's going to be on our bylaws real quick, but it's going to be like the provost office is going to also hammer out those like because we provided them broad topics in the bylaws. And so it's going to be like, yes, we want this. And then we send a formal request and then it'll be like, okay, let's start really hammering it. And then we can start the whole entire thing. So I think it's a weird process, but this is the best way to kind of logistically look at it.
Marty, then Craig.
Yeah, the time that this was taken out of the purview was, in a sense you're right, when it went downhill, but there was in fact a committee thereafter for a year or so that met occasionally. But those years after it was taken out were tremendous years of expansion of the university, both internally and in New York and Qatar, and it was spreading out. And so I guess my point in saying all that is that I've forgotten what's at the earlier stages of this, but is there a definition of the actual efforts of this committee? Because I remember a couple of meetings I went to way back, there was discussion of budget, but it was, you know, very much in the areas of how much we're going to put into this capital expansion program or that capital expansion program, or, you know, where we might grow and things. And in that sense, it was coordinated with the campus planning committee as well, because the campus planning committee had that role to think about spaces that were available for growth. But I'm just wondering, what is it that we're thinking of discussing in it? I'm not against it at all. I just want to know where's the definition of what we're going to be discussing in it?
Yeah. So that's in the chunk in the bylaws, the 5.4.1 responsibilities. But the committee in full is really only going to be supported as much as the provost's office allows it to have the access to the more confidential budgetary information. But I think this is a great way for participatory, and since they do seem to be very favorable to it, I would think this would be a great relationship to start building. And then, I mean, at first it's going to be a little bit like, okay, what exactly can we provide to you? How much can we provide this trust? But I think in the long term, if this committee is constantly supported, I think it can start looking over more and more broad information. But this is a great first step.
I agree. I agree with you. That's great to hear that you have those aspirations. And then the other thing would be, what's the mechanism of coordination with, for example, the campus planning committee and the strategic plan committee, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a key one.
Yeah. I suppose the coordination would be coming in the fact that all these individuals would be able to provide the updates to their assemblies in the best possible manner that also abides by the confidentiality of it. And then I would hope that communication of the representatives from each organization, each assembly that does work with the budget planning committee, I think like the individual members would be able to sync up with each other. That's my first thing that comes to my head. And then I think obviously there would be some indirect mechanisms with the budget planning committee, with the planning committee and the campus planning committee. So I think not a wholly direct one, but I think I would hope indirect through, you know, committee updates as we typically do.
Okay. Since I probably won't have a chance to talk about this at the campus planning, so I'll bypass. We did have a meeting at the campus planning. It's the strategic plan revision committee. You know, this university has a strategic plan. It was put together 10 years ago. Some ways it's been fulfilled, in many ways it hasn't. In many ways it has to adjust to the changes in the sustainability and things of that sort that are needed to be put in the context of the strategic plan that weren't there before because it didn't exist. The strategic plan apparently deals with 20 to 50 years. There's some effort in the revision to bring it back down to reality, which is 10 years. But my point in saying this is, in the course of that, we had somebody there from the budget committee who talked about how, well, you really ought to, in devising a strategic plan, take into account the capital funding, capital expenditure committee, which is comes out of the board of trustees and others, where decisions are made about where we're going to go and things of that sort. So my point in saying all this is that a coordination at the early levels, and once again, I apologize that I don't remember the earlier sections of this, but a coordination at earlier levels with strategic plan committee, the capital funding committee, and others, well, would make a lot of sense. I guess Charles, who's been at those meetings, knows some of the meetings of the budget committee, knows that I don't know whether they even had discussions about what does the rest of the campus think about a particular.
Well, I mean, here's a sample thing. So the budget model has parameters, that little dials you take. For example, there's something called 60-40. So 60% goes to teaching, 40% to enrollment. Now, if you turn that, what if you turn that dial to, 61-39, what happens? And then you have things like incentives, all right? Because every department chair is going to want to, basically looks out after their department, rightly so. But is the net result then that you would tend not to care as much about service teaching or courses for non-experts, because this means, the people sitting in your classroom, the dollars don't flow your way. So that I think the number one concern, again, is to have a lot, the budget model should inspire the kind of academic behavior that we want.
Yes.
And that is a gigantic mystery.
Right. Okay, so the sum of all of this is, for me, that, it's supportive to get the committee together. It's terrific. But what's even more important is to start thinking, if it gets approved, about strategically becoming aware of processes like Charlie just brought up, and what other committees are doing in their deliberations, because you could get that committee and it could sit around and it could say, I want 61 versus 60. And and nobody will know who to talk to, or there won't be anybody, there won't be any purchase of that. Okay.
So, Craig.
My question is similar to Marty's in the time requirements that committee members will be, I mean, I'd like to be able to capture that in some way to the folks on our assembly to be able to say, hey, by volunteering to be a part of this committee, this is what the expectation is. And the other piece to it, you know, I deal with budgets at the departmental level, but I don't know how competent I would be to sit in and make value-added comments at the university budget level, except for just kind of what I think would be helpful. So in terms of having the right experts identified from each of the groups to be making those meaningful contributions, that's a concern.
Yeah, I think that is always a concern, especially, you know, it's staffing when it comes, I feel that on the undergraduate level, because sometimes you send people to committees and you're like, oh, I hope they understand what they're doing. And I think that was a reason, rationale for the terms, because of the fact that we're extending it past a year, it's going to provide that little bit of learning opportunity. And of course, like, there's always a learning curve. And right. So I think, you know, with the terms and with setting an expectation, just saying like, this is budget planning. This is not like you get to decide like how many, like you get to split $100. This is the university budget. So I think just, you know, really expressing like the breadth of it and the potential depth, and really just saying, if you join this committee, this should be really your only committee assignment, or from the employee assembly, knowing it from like the SA side, like our members of our appropriations committee, like which deals all of our money, that's their only really big committee assignment. That's what they do a lot. So China just setting that expectation, I think, is saying like, don't try to do seven committees plus this one, just really focus on this one. And so that's what I would say, recommendation going back to the EA.
Matt and then Charlie.
Thanks. I just, Mary, after your comments, I whispered in Joe's ear, in terms of looking at lines 75 to 78, in terms of the bits of the budget planning committee shall review in consultation with the appropriate UA committees a number of items. And after talking with Joe, I'm going to motion to amend on line 77, strike and on 78, add after university, comma, and all matters relating to campus planning and infrastructure, which would have this committee consulting with the CIC and CPC in terms of matters that are related to that.
So the motion is to strike and
on 77.
On 77 and replace it with
no, and then on 78, add after university, you know, comma, and then add, and all matters relating to campus planning and infrastructure.
All matters relating to campus planning and infrastructure.
Yes.
Okay. So
point of information, this is the second and on 77?
Yeah,
that is correct.
Yeah.
That is correct. I apologize. That is correct. The second and at the end of the line.
All seconds relating to campus infrastructure. Okay.
You want the page type?
I love this little system we have going. Okay, so we'll move into, so there's been a second on the motion, so we'll move into discussion on the amendment. Does anyone want to speak on this amendment?
Motion to call the question.
Second.
The motion to call the question. There's a second. Is there any dissent to calling the question? Seeing none, we will. Is there any dissent to the amendment at all? No. Okay. Then the amendment is approved, and we have added and all matters related to campus planning and campus infrastructure. Okay. Craig, did you have another point you wanted to make?
I was going to motion to table this resolution.
Okay, so then there's been a motion to table the resolution. Is there a second? Okay, so there's no second. We're out of the speakers list, so.
Quick thing, Joe. So, like, yeah. Take the Cornell Cinema discussion. So that was money and academics. In your mind, do you feel that the SA made educated decisions?
I think that the decision by the SA was made because there is that lack of information. And I think there was an attempt by the SA to play into that lack of information and force administration as they did to bridge fund. I think with this committee, I think there would have been an ability to have a more fruitful conversation instead of having to go through the whole fiasco. I think, but with this, there would have been a more, I would think,
rash decision being made. So that's what that's the best answer.
Good question. It's said that the budget and planning, the budget, Mr. Streeter's foreman office has bought into this as being reasonable to entertain this.
Yeah.
So my question is, who's the chair? Yeah, and my point in saying that is that if the chair is going to take an active role in structuring the agendas and responding to comments, it should be somebody who is convinced that it's a valuable committee in getting campus opinion and formulating it and developing it into things that will work in discussion, even in a broad format, rather than. Rather than someone who is constantly fighting to get any one issue into the pipeline to have serious discussion on the broader in that broader forum. Mm-hmm. So the chair has to be a really vigorous person engaged with the planning activities, budgetary activities, not planning, budgetary activities comprehensively. And understands the different colleges and the roles they play in funding and the monies that go out to them based upon their requests and things of that sort.
Yeah, I mean, based on what the resolution says, the chair could be anybody.
I know, I guess that was a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
I wonder whether we should stipulate that if they're going to buy into it, it should be a person active in the the whole budgetary process as a vocation.
Okay. Are there any other comments on the resolution? No. All right. Is there a motion
to table it? It seems like there's a teeny bit of things we want to work out and reach out to the constituent assemblies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
Can I ask if there could be a report based upon a inquiry at the budget office,
yeah,
whether that office would be willing to take on the role of chairing or co-chairing if you need to have somebody a little mm-hmm. more, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so there's been a motion to table. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, there's a couple seconds. Is there any dissent to tabling?
We would bring it up again when?
Table to the next meeting.
Yeah, it would be the next meeting. Okay, then seeing no dissent, the resolution is tabled. We will move on to, yeah.
Can I just have one more comment? I want to be clear that it's not, I'm requesting the tabling from the standpoint of just clarification of a few items. I think the idea is a great idea, but from a competency standpoint, I'd like to have a little better understanding to be able to speak to my assembly.
Oh, yeah, no, it's completely reasonable. We should, I mean, I think it's good when people take their time to understand things instead of hastily passing them. So very encouraging. All right, so we'll move on to UA Resolution Number 10, in support of EA Resolution 8, furthering the institutional commitment to all LGBTQ+ members of the Cornell community. Joe, you have the floor.
Yeah. So as I mentioned the last time, the reason it was tabled last time is because the sponsors were having a meeting with everyone that was involved in this decision, and we had that meeting. And a lot of good things came out of that meeting. And so there's going to be, I'm sending another email with all the amendments that I'm proposing. But so essentially we had the meeting with Vice President Ryan Lombardi, Dean of Students, Head of Workforce Diversity and Inclusion, basically requesting why this change was made, looking at it. And it made a lot of sense why the change was made. It was just ineffectively communicated to the employees that were going to be affected by it. And so from that meeting, we actually, said, okay, let's look at the communication plan around it. And then let's also go one step further and really kind of hammer down that LGBTQ+ issues at Cornell are very important. And so essentially one of the more proposed kind of long-term planning was creating a university council on LGBTQ issues on campus to really kind of see all of them together and basically get all the people in the room talking, because this situation is one that happens all too frequently when talking about this community. And therefore, everyone was really receptive to it. And then lastly, I was looking at strategic planning for the eventual expansion of the LGBT Resource Center as you know, that is a primary concern right now, mainly because as in student population and how many students identify with this identity are continuously influxing over the years, and the expansion of students in the future, there needs to be a kind of look at that, especially. So we're putting that in there to kind of just pursue that strategic plan and start that mindset up again. So I sent the amendment, basically removes everything from that line 96 to the end and replaces it with this chunk of language that I just emailed out.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So I feel like we should take a moment to read that, because this changes all the be it therefore resolved clauses, which like functionally turns it into a kind of different thing. So would highly recommend reading if you can. We can share that.
Okay, thanks, thank you.
All right, so take 30 seconds to read this over.
Okay.
Yeah. Is there something after the and?
On 106?
Yeah.
No, that's the old language.
Yeah, that's like not even part of the resolution.
That all the resolve clauses on the original resolution were taken out and added with new ones that were emailed.
Yeah. Okay. So has everyone had an opportunity to understand the proposed amendment?
I'll second the proposed amendment.
All right. There's a second on Joe's proposed amendment. So we'll move into discussion on it. Does anyone have any comments on the proposed amendment?
Motion to call the question on the proposed amendment.
All right. There's a motion to call the question. Is there a second? There's a second. Is there any dissent to calling the question on the amendment? You guys are a lively bunch today. Is there any dissent on the amendment? No. Okay, then the amendment passes. We'll go back into discussion on the resolution in general. I don't have anyone on the speakers list, so Joe.
Yeah, the GPSA passed the resolution last night. I think it's really important that this assembly does, specifically because it is a big employee and faculty concern across the board. And yeah, it was, that's it.
Motion to call the question on the resolution.
Second.
All right. Is there any dissent to calling the question on the resolution? All right. Seeing no dissent, we will vote on UA Resolution 10, which is in support of EA Resolution 8. I've used that a couple times. So it's UA Resolution number 10. So if you are in favor of UA Resolution number 10, please raise your hand or placard. Okay, and if you are opposed, and if you'd like to abstain, all right, UA Resolution 10 passes by a vote of 12-0-1. Congratulations, Joe.
Yay, thanks.
Okay, so we will now move into discussion on UA Resolution number 12, increasing access to gender-neutral bathrooms on campus. That came out of the CIC, and I don't think Chris could be here today. So he sent a committee member. Who is the committee member?
It's Ian.
Is it?
Ian.
All right, Ian. I didn't know.
Can I sit at the table?
Yeah.
No. No. Sit back there.
No, I have to sit up behind her. Okay, so new information has come to me, but should I just like discuss?
Yep, this is the same as the essay.
Okay, so this came originally through the Student Assembly Infrastructure Fund Committee or Commission. It was proposed by Lavanya, who is the president of Haven, the LGBTQ student union on campus. And she requested increasing gender-neutral bathrooms across campus, and so this was the resolution that came out of that. And it has come to my attention that there was a university assembly resolution about 2 years ago, but it seems that maybe action from that has stalled out. And so a concern of ours was that there are a lot of buildings and very important buildings for student life, such as Appel Commons, RPCC, and the Townhouse Community Center, which have no gender-neutral bathrooms. And especially being a freshman, those are very important spaces. And so this, like, we kind of wanted to jumpstart or like restart that effort to increase gender-neutral bathrooms across campus, and maybe even in cases test out what like a multi-stall gender-neutral bathroom could function like.
Okay, first on the speakers list, I have Matt.
So as Ian mentioned, I mean, this was, for those of you who remember 2 years ago, we listed Smith that had a resolution very similar on these lines. The resolution was passed and was accepted by the president. That resolution, in essence, we discussed with Gilbert Delgado, the university architect at the time. The way my understanding the building codes are, there are certain different buildings on campus are subject to different vintages of the building code, and some of them therefore have rules about you must have X number of bathrooms for male and female on certain number of floors. Resolution at the time was to convert all single occupancy bathrooms to gender neutral immediately, to make a statement about that all as you can use whatever restroom you feel most comfortable with, and that new construction moving forward include these deliberately, and then also when retrofits would occur, that would be a part of the retrofit. My understanding that actually the time the resolution was accepted, I know from just my experience walking through some of the newer buildings, including ones in the law school that just redone, that has been, I have seen them personally. It sounds like talking with Ian that stalled out a little bit, so I'm actually after the meeting going to send him a copy of UA, I want to say R6 from 2 years ago, as well as the response from the president, because it was accepted, and it seems like there's an ability to, if it stalled out, it's a different approach than saying we want it, considering it was already accepted. But I really want to commend them for bringing this back to our attention, because it did unfortunately seem to fall through the cracks over the years.
Yeah. Okay, does anyone else want to be on the speakers list? Ellis.
The general question. Is there some rule that says somebody can't go in any bathroom they want, regardless of the little figure on the door? Does it have to be specified as gender neutral? Can you just go into any bathroom you want? But what are they going to do? It's like going up the wrong, down, up and down the stairs in the wrong direction? I'm just curious.
I don't know if there's any rule, but I can tell you that in terms of people's attitudes about it, a lot of people would not feel happy if they noticed like people going into bathrooms. There have been complaints about it, and people don't feel comfortable doing it because of that.
Just to note, the resolution we passed 2 years ago called on the university to make an affirmative statement that you may use whatever restroom you see fit. My understanding is they did so. So there's no policy that would stop you. I think Elena's points are the point that this resolution is aiming to address, and that it's a matter of it's comfort, and it's just in terms of making people comfortable using the restrooms.
And another component of this resolution was, or in tandem, Residential Student Congress passed a resolution regarding gender neutral bathrooms in residencies, on campus residencies.
Yeah. Okay, Marty?
Yeah, I was just starting to write a possible be a further result, which would go right after the first one, but I want to just field it to people as an idea, and that is that there be a survey conducted of all buildings to see where this resolution would apply, and so that the results of that survey be reported, to the assemblies. In a couple of months or something, somebody could go around and look at every building and say, this is missing, and therefore, I'm sure there is that data around, but it seems to me like it would be useful to have us know, what's missing and what has been applied according to that past resolution and what hasn't been, if there's been any backtracking or whether there's been any non-application. I don't know. Does that make sense to you? I won't offer it as a resolution, that amendment.
On Cornell maps, it does show every, or it should show every gender-neutral bathroom on Central Campus.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but we're asking in here for places where there aren't gender-neutral bathrooms to be there. Has there been a survey to show, or do you know for a fact that there aren't? I guess that you're saying that because there is a map of everyone that there is. Okay. Well, All right, then I withdraw any hope to do that. I withdraw anything.
Motion to suspend the agenda and move into Martha Pollock for President Pollock's presentation.
Is there any dissent to that? Because they're here, so.
We can wait outside.
We can wait outside if you want.
Oh, no.
No.
No. And Gabe, where do you want me? The head or the foot? Down there?
We do there.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I'm at the foot. You're at the head.
You're at the foot.
You're there.
It's just, there's not that many people, but it's, guys are far away. Thank you. So if it's okay, I have just a few, like 2 or 3 minutes of comments, and then I thought mostly discussion. I wanted to start by saying that I really welcome this opportunity to be here and to talk to all of you. And I want to like just start blunt up front and diffuse a rumor that I've heard. I have heard several people say that I want to steal the code back from the university assembly, that I'm interested in owning the code. Let me state as categorically as I can, this is not true. I believe very much that there are problems in the code. I think we've all agreed on that. I think the code is needlessly complicated. I think it's hard to read. I think in places it's internally consistent. And I genuinely look forward to working with you and the CJC on it, but I have no interest in owning it. And I keep hearing this and I thought, okay, well, I'm gonna be here today. So let me just start and grab the bull by the horns and say that you own the code. I do think it needs revision. I look forward to being revision. I think revised. I think there are some serious issues in it that put all of us at risk. But I don't want to own it. That's your job. I want to work with you on it so that instead of being in a situation where we're throwing things over the transom back and forth, we're actually talking to each other and we're getting to something we can all agree on. So I wanted to get that out of the way to start. I also wanted to just update you on two key areas. I know you're a very interested. I am. One is diversity and inclusion, and including the update on the presidential task force, and then the position of the JA. So on diversity, I first wanted to start with some good news. It's always nice to start with good news. There's a journal called the Journals of Black in Higher Education that every year puts out a report on first year enrollment. They just put out the report a couple months ago for 2017. They look at 27 what they call high-ranking universities. So these are the research. These are the universities you would think, the Ivy League, Duke, Chicago, Stanford, and so on. Of those 27, we are second at Cornell in the number of first-year students who identify as Black. We're just behind UNC and just ahead of UVA. In terms of percentage of first-year students who identify as Black, we're ninth, so we're in the top third. And we're second in terms of yield, and I think that's really important. So in terms of the percentage of African-American and African students to whom we offer admission, we're second in the number who come here. I wish I had similar external reports to provide on Hispanics and Native Americans and Pacific Islanders and so on. I don't, but I think that this is good. This is good. Nevertheless, you know, I think all of us know that since I was last with you in November, we've continued to have issues. There continues to be a charged climate. As I've said many times, I will do everything in my power to make this a safer, more equitable, more inclusive campus. I can't do it alone. I certainly need the assemblies to help. I certainly need every faculty and student and staff member. It's on all of us. I really appreciate that you're engaged in outreach. I know you're having open sessions, for example, on the hate speech code. I think outreach is crucial. The task force, as you know, is also engaged in outreach. Please fill out their survey if you haven't. Please encourage your constituents to do so. As you also know, concurrent with your work and the work of the task force, we're moving forward with certain initiatives so that we keep them going. The Dean of Students Office has expanded to provide additional support to students where it's really needed. Maria Love is the new Marla Love, my glasses are wet. Marla Love, I haven't met her yet, is the new Senior Associate Dean for Diversity and Equity. Associate Dean Renee Alexander has assumed the new role of Senior Advisor to the Dean to focus on issues of campus climate. Kevin Graham, who I just had the pleasure to meet the other day, is a new Assistant Director focusing on undocumented and DACA student support. We have a wonderful gift from an alumnus to stand up a first generation and low income student support center, and we're looking for a director of that. And we're also looking for a new dean
associate dean who will oversee the alternative dispute resolution process, which many of our peers have found to be extremely helpful. I think I mentioned to you last time that last fall we increased the number of counselors in CAP, and four of the five were people of color. One thing I'm very excited about is that CTI, the Center for Teaching Innovation, is developing a new online course that will be made available to all faculty and graduate students to help basically learn, if they want, about techniques for addressing diversity in the classroom, dealing with difficult issues in the classroom, and so on. And this fall, we're going to have a new student orientation program. The student orientation is now a day longer that will help incoming students learn how to live in a diverse community. For many students, it's the first time they've been in a community with people who don't look like them. The Presidential Task Force on Campus Climate has been working hard. They had a retreat on Sunday. I've mentioned the survey. Having that input from the campus community is going to be critical in what they report out, with a report due on May 1st. And in advance of that, they're going to be putting out an interim report by the end of spring break. And as I say, I understand that CJC has been doing public sessions. I really look forward to partnering with you on all of this, particularly on the part that is relevant to the code. And some of the initiatives are not necessarily specific to the code. Then the only other thing is I similarly really appreciate your response and partnership. I appreciate Gabe and the other people who came and spoke with me about the JA position. When I accepted your resolution 11, it was with full intent to work with you on cleaning up that existing process. I firmly believe that a more regularized appointment and employment process will be really helpful to the current JA and to recruiting future JAs. And my only goal is to strengthen the terms of this position, which is critically important. I am a little concerned. I happily accepted your May 1st deadline. We're anxious to get going. We need to get going on this, and we've reached out a few times. And so I'm asking all of you, I can only meet that deadline that you've put on us if you work with me. So please get back to us. We are ready to go on it. I think it's doable. I don't think major changes are needed. They're pretty straightforward. It's just taking some sentences that were incoherent, making them coherent, and then hopefully making this a more regularized process. We've really got to get going because, you know, we want to hit that May 1st deadline, but also since this is a change to the campus code, we will have to go through the normal processes of community outreach and input. I suspect that most of this isn't going to be an issue that I think there'll be a lot of debate on, but we want to do the right thing and have public notice and comment on it. That is really all I wanted to say, because mostly I wanted to leave the time for discussion. So thank you.
Okay, so first on the speakers list, and raise your hands and I'll get you on the speakers list. If you'd like to ask a question, is Matt.
So first off, thank you for joining us, and thank you for the clarification around the code. I actually just wanted to publicly for the assembly and you commend Dean Peñalvera on his task force, the task force. They've been working wonderfully with the CJC, and it's been a pleasure to work with them. So I just want to publicly thank him for that. I guess my question is in the spirit of cooperation, is there anything in particular that we can do for you that we can help you with that you'd like us to look at? I know the JA appointment is on our radar, but is there anything else you want this assembly to look at, or do you think that we should pay special attention to?
Well, you know, as I say, I am concerned, and I know you are, about the code itself. I think the code, let me be blunt, it's very hard to read. We're giving it to 17-year-old kids, and it's very hard to read, and it's had a lot of stuff added to it and added to over the years. So I would love for this group or the CJC committee it would be really helpful for me to take up, for you guys to take on a serious revision of the code. I don't want to do it. I don't want to own it. I am more than willing and would offer that either I or my vice presidents are available for consultation so that we all move, you know, what I think would be it's shared governance. It's not you do your part and then you give it to me. And I, you know, what would be really helpful is if we set up a process. You have the ownership of it and the leadership, but consult with us so that we're all moving along the same pace. I think if we could clean up the code to something that was more direct, simpler, easier to understand, separated processes from what the violations are and so on. That would be wonderful.
Mark.
Oh, yes, thanks.
Hi, Marty.
I You used the magic term that I was waiting to hear, which is the shared governance one. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the campus, you know, the judicial system and JA and so forth. And I just wanted to broaden that a bit more to get your view on what is the role of the UA in shared governance beyond that point? Because we have resolutions, for example, we just looked at one resolution that was about gender neutral bathrooms. And we're looking at another eventually that's about a crosswalk in Grizzly. Yet on the that's the specifics that come out of the UA. And they come out of it. If you think about shared governance as everybody contributes to the overall view of how the university should grow, what the climate should be and everything, then these are make perfect sense to come out of the UA as saying the campus believes that a crosswalk at Risley is really essential. Please do it. Mm-hmm. And we'll send you a resolution and you can say, no, I'm not going to do a crosswalk at Risley because I won't sign this, or you can accept it. Those are the specifics. But the general that they grow out of is the fact that when this whole governance system was refigured in the 60s, the view was that there would be more participation in campus life from the top down to the bottom. So for example, one of the committees that was formed was a budget planning committee that took on certain aspects of the university life that weren't before that point in the purview of shared governance. Another one was the campus planning committee, which talked about, you know, where you're going to put buildings and what's going to happen when those buildings occur. So the question, though, has always come to my mind since then is, well, in the case of the budget planning committee, it was pretty clear that that wasn't going to be something that we would participate in a serious way. We could come up with these small points, but in terms of talking about our views of what's going to happen, it wouldn't be important. In terms of campus planning, we have a little bit more purchase in the sense that, but still, that's also the case, more or less, like there is the crosswalk, which people have been asking for a long time, or whether we've had a resolution about it. But so what is the role of the UA in shared governance? Where does it have purchase in the process?
So Marty, let me answer. There's sort of two questions there, I think. Mm-hmm. One is shared governance between faculty, staff, students, and administration. And then the other is the UA versus the EA versus the SA versus the GPSA, I'm missing one, faculty senate, right? The latter seems to me pretty clear. Your job is to represent those issues that go across all of those. I mean, I think that's pretty easy. It might be to back up a resolution that comes from another, but for the most part, and that's why, for example, you're handed the campus code. Now, I should say on the campus code, and this is totally up to you, that doesn't mean necessarily there has to be a single campus code. I mean, you might decide that part of the complication or that parts of it only apply to faculty, only apply to students, but nonetheless, behavior cuts across everyone. So that I think is easy. In terms of shared governance and, you know, where does the administration come in versus the other constituents? You know, I think it cuts both ways. I think when it comes to issues of curriculum, to issues of tenure, to issues of admission standards, those are sorts of things that really the faculty own. I mean, you have to have a provost who has a veto power, but those are things the faculty own, and it's our job to provide advice, to provide guidance, to say we might have donors who could support, you know, whatever.
Right.
I think when it comes to issues of operations, management, the budget, those are places where we have to own that because I have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that at the end of the year, you're all paid. But I'm not going to make those decisions without input and guidance from this group. So I think it's sort of, I mean, in some ways it you know, one group advises the other and makes the decisions, and then the other group advises.
Yeah, well, just following up, I agree with you about the faculty. In fact, that's in our legislation.
Yeah.
We don't have anything to do with curriculum and stuff. But let's look at the operations question.
Yeah. I think other people might want to ask a question. Can I get you onto the second speaker's list?
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's okay.
If you want to...
Yeah. Richard?
Martha, thank you for coming.
And I really appreciated the way you introduced the concerns about the code. I want to address something specific that I think is one of the sources of the rumors that you reported. So the Task Force on Hate Speech, several times officially, they've described their task as proposing changes in the code to you. And they are going to report, as I understand it, by the end of the semester. Risa Lieberitz isn't here today, but she's the chair of the subcommittee of the CJC that's doing this.
Yeah.
And
I'm sorry, I'm just shutting this door because it's hard to hear you. Thank you.
And I followed both her reports and on just the open hearings. And that committee does not feel comfortable reporting by the end of this semester.
I'll wait for them.
That is what I wanted confirmation on.
Yeah.
The report on changes of the code sounded a whole lot like.
Okay, so Richard, I answered this last time, but let me try this again.
Yeah.
So back in September, when we had this terrible episode in College Town, and the community really wanted to get involved beyond those who were already active in assembly. Many people, I mean, we had hundreds of, you know, so many people wanted to be involved. That's why I had that whole process. I thought it was very important for me as president to say, climate is important. It's important to me as president, and I'm going to stand up a task force at the presidential level to put a stake in the ground and say, I want to hear from the whole campus about this. I could not do that without including some group that was going to talk about hate speech. That was just too much a part of what the issues were. I have said all along that what I'm getting from them is suggestions, advice. They're not going to, I mean, they can, anyone can come in and tell me what they think should happen to the code. That doesn't mean we, I mean, I'm not even authorized to change the code even if I wanted to. You guys own that authority. They're giving me advice. Now, if Risa's group takes 2 years, I'm gonna be forced by the campus to come back to you guys and say, look, I need this by such and such a deadline, because otherwise the rest of the campus is gonna write you guys off and throw a riot. But I'm not pushing Risa to get anything done by the end of this semester. I hope that helps. I don't know how to be any clearer about
that. Just a note,
Richard.
More
I'll be very fast. Is
more
it a note or a question?
What
is it?
It's a note.
Okay, a quick.
So I don't get to answer, right?
Yes. A more diplomatic way of putting it by the task force would have helped, because it really sounded like an user.
Fine. Cosmetic. But you know, look, the past is the past. I'm telling you what my intention was and what my intention is. I can't change a document I wrote the week after my inauguration, to be blunt about it.
Yes. Bob.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I really appreciated the forthright way you took on the code of conduct and your reassurance that we have ownership, and also your offer to work with us on it. I agree with you totally. The code is a very difficult document. I'm not on the CJC and I'm not a lawyer, but it's a very difficult thing to read. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people who put a lot of hard work and a lot of good intent for a long time into it. And I think all of the additions to it, and there are many additions to it, are well intended. Mm-hmm. But it's easy. It's not easy at all. It's not easy to change anything. But it's relatively easy to have a process which adds things on. It is much harder to step back and simplify or start fresh. So I think you've said a couple of times that we should simplify and start fresh. And I agree. But I'm wondering if you have practical advice about how to help us do that, because it is a challenge for us.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you're asking that. And I should be clear, I understand that I'm not criticizing the process that led up to it, but that code has been there for what, 50 years? You know, so it's been aggregated and aggregated and edited and edited. And we're handing it to 18-year-old kids and saying, you have to abide by this. Honestly, I like have to hold my eyes open to read it. It's just gotten cumbersome.
I'm a 66-year-old faculty member. I struggle with it.
I'm younger than you. not much. So here's my suggestion. Go out and find a few other universities. Go and look at the codes of some other universities. Some are just as cumbersome and complicated. But there's some, and I don't remember which ones I'd have to. So that's point number one. Look and see what other people did, and see if you can learn anything of that. Point number two, which is something, you know, I haven't taught this year, but when I teach computer science, one of the things you have to teach freshmen who are writing programs is that you have to be willing to throw away some of the code. You know, they've worked so hard, I mean, now computer code. They've worked so hard to write the computer code, and it's got bugs, and it's not working, and they want to fix it. And at a certain point, you have to say to the student, look, it'll be much easier. Throw out this section and try to read it. The third thing, and again, I am not meaning to push you, this, but you're asking me my advice. Mm-hmm. I think some consideration should be given to whether I don't necessarily mean separate codes, but whether you should split apart sections that apply to faculty, to staff, and to students. Because I think some of the, when they're trying to describe processes, which necessarily are different, tenured faculty have different rights than students, than staff, I think the descriptions of the processes become unbelievably convoluted, and it might be simpler to pull those apart. But start by looking at some other universities.
Thank you.
Joe.
Thank you so much for coming. It's always great. I would say one of the main concerns recently has been how the Greek judicial system interacts with our other greater judicial system under the campus code of conduct. Where do you and the whole entire president office kind of view as, is the Greek judicial system ready to come under the campus code of conduct? Does something need to happen with the campus code of conduct before anything? Where is the discussion of Greek life on this campus going forward?
So it's a really great question. And what I can tell you, because it's the truth, is we're talking about it. It's one of the main things we're talking about. I'm having pretty intensive conversations with Ryan Lombardi. I know the Faculty Senate, I mean, Charlie can tell you, UFC is very interested in this. I don't have an answer for you yet because we're still sorting it out, but I think it's one of the biggest issues we're facing right now.
Okay, so now we can get to the second speaker.
Marty.
Hi. I hope you're ready.
Well, I mean, just the recent comments about the code sparked my a separate point of inquiry. I mean, I was part of the revision of the code 10 years ago or so, mm-hmm. 10 years ago, yeah. And we did a lot of work to look at other codes. And I guess I'm not so concerned with the convolutedness. It would be interesting to find the places where people are, you know, go to sleep or things like that when they're reading it, and just identify them. The places where it's had the most difficulty and we've spent a lot of time on have been in the area of speech and assembly and the need to protect the rights for speech and assembly on the campus. So I don't find those places to be particularly dense, but they have been the area where we've done the most controversy. So I'd be very concerned. In fact, one of the places where we were most challenged in looking at other codes was that they were much more stringent, many of them, in areas that we wanted to be more liberal, for want of a better word, in allowing things. So it would be useful to go through and make a list of those things, each of us in our own particular way.
And just to be clear, I'm not necessarily recommending that you look at other universities to adopt the content of their code, mm-hmm. but the structure. So for example, there are a number of codes where it clearly says of student behavior, put aside the speech part, here are the kinds of behaviors that, not just student, anyone, you know, here are the kinds of things, it's just a list. Here are the kinds of things you are expected to hear to, and right. here are the kinds of things that are violation. Right now, it's so woven into each, it's just right. pretty hard to get.
Well, I agree entirely with you. In fact, at one of the meetings we had just recently, this isn't my third level, right?
It's a question.
Oh, it is a question. One of the areas that
I just love the fact that you let the undergraduate control the professors. It's great.
Why not? He's the chair. One of the that's my fault. All right, let me just go back one more to this original question square, which was, you said in the area of operations management and budget, the administration is in charge. Now, I guess I'm interested in the fact that we do have these campus planning committees on which we sit, mm-hmm. and we participate. And our view is at the campus planning committee to talk as an equal with the campus planner, with the landscape designer, and everything else. So, but the question really is, what is our role vis-a-vis those
right.
things?
So again, I mean, your role is, I think, very clear to provide guidance, to ensure that we have a sense of what's important to the faculty, to make recommendations of priorities. But at the end of the day, suppose that planning committee said, okay, you should build these 15 buildings, and I don't have the budget for it. I mean, at the end of the day, I have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that the university
right.
budget stays in balance.
Right, I see. And this is really important to get this across. So, but we have a resolution about gender-neutral bathrooms.
Right.
So we have a right to say we need gender-neutral bathrooms as a matter of principle on campus, right?
Right?
In particular, their display.
I'm going to have to move on.
What?
There's another person.
Okay.
Yeah. Richard. Yeah. Oh, you didn't want to. Okay, well then
I'm just fine.
Then when I thought that you before. Okay, Marty.
Oh, we have gender neutral. What role does it play? In other words, something to show you as a resolution. We want to have this following the distribution of them, and you'll say yes, we can, or no, we can't. I mean, that's certainly what that would be exercising your leadership, but. So how are we governing if we're doing that? If we're saying
how are you governing? You are making very clear what the priorities of the UA are. Just like when Mike Kotlikoff goes out and says, gee, I'd like to have radical collaborations, but at the end of the day, it's the faculty who have to populate them. I mean, I take seriously these resolutions. I can't always say yes, right? I don't know. I mean, I actually personally absolutely think we should have gender neutral bathrooms. But if you come in and you say, I think we should have a gender neutral bathroom every 50 feet, and I say, well, then I can't give any faculty a raise next year, I have to weigh that, right? I mean, I can't take individual resolutions in isolation. And sometimes if I have to say no, or I'm going to do it a different way, it doesn't mean that I haven't thought about it. It doesn't mean I might not try to do it later. It might simply mean that I don't have the resources, or it might mean that, in fact, on rare occasions, I really don't believe that what's behind this resolution is something I can support. But I try not to do that.
Okay, well, then I would suggest that if we do put forward things like that, or let's say a crosswalk between, at this,
yeah.
that it not be, that there be a simple statement about why it's not possible. That, in other words, we can't afford to put across, well, that won't be the issue.
But let me say something about that, too. I mean, the resolutions, appropriately enough, come in throughout the year.
Right.
We do budgeting. I mean, you everyone knows how a budget works, right? Sometimes what I have to say is, we'll put this in the hopper to compare, you know, because maybe you tell me you want a crosswalk this month, and I say yes, and I expend my resources on it. And then next month you say to me, you want gender-neutral bathrooms. I mean, the way to do a budget is not, I'm getting resolutions from five different assemblies. I got almost 50 this year from the SA. I mean, I'm serious. They're up to 48, is that right?
You have a lot.
So my point is, sometimes it's not we can't afford it. It's great idea, and now I need to consider it in the context of other stuff.
That's terrific, because we just passed a resolution that
okay.
said
okay. Party. Yeah, so
we just passed
gonna,
a resolution.
Yeah.
Party.
But
again,
so okay, Matt.
I just had a very brief question. It's not about this. In terms of how is Cornell Tech progressing? Is there anything you can share with us? I know I've spoken to a number of my colleagues. I'm an MBA student, so I have a number of Cornell Tech MBAs. They're interested in shared governance, but how is it going generally, and anything that you think would be prudent to share?
When Cornell Tech was started, there were certain metrics. By such and such a date, we would have, and I'm not going to remember the metrics in my head, but anyway, we'd have so many students, we'd have so many faculty, there'd be so many startups, there'd be so many master's degrees. We are ahead on every single metric. So in fact, it's really good. If you haven't been down there, I would, next time you're in New York City, I would really encourage you to come visit. It's beautiful.
It absolutely is.
Joe.
I have a question specifically for student staff members on campus, especially resident advisors and graduate resident fellows over on West Campus. With the overall heightened campus climate that's more intense, is there any plans specifically about how to really support those individuals in those roles? Is there something that is planned long-term to help them really adjust to this
heightened sense overall.
One of the things that Ryan Lombardi is working on is an enhanced training program specifically for resident advisors, because they're often the first line of defense against climate issues. They're dealing with mental health issues and so on. We're also trying to enhance the training for TAs, by the way, because they, you know, faculty members have more experience, but TAs are often also very uncomfortable dealing with these issues. I don't know of plans for other student staff, but it's a really good suggestion, and I'll talk to Ryan and see if there's some way we might. Would you remind me?
Absolutely.
It's a really good idea. Thank you.
So I actually had a question. So my question is, two of the kind of things that you brought up in the beginning, diversity and inclusion, and then cleaning up the JA process. Aside from that, my question is, are there other issues that the university is facing that you would appreciate specifically the university assembly's kind of feedback on?
It's sort of more for faculty senate, but I think UA should weigh in on it as well, is the proposal coming out, not the proposal, there was this faculty committee that made suggestions about what we do with the social sciences. I think everyone, the provost is standing up a large number of ways to provide input, town halls, meetings online. I think that's a really, really important issue for everyone to weigh in on. That's what's top of, I mean, right now the code, the JA, and as you know, because again, we talked about it, I had this discussion with Richard last time too, Charlie and Anna have done a remarkable job, I think, pulling together a new consensual relations policy, and they're in the public comment period on that, and we should get comment on that too.
Okay, Richard. Yeah.
So Martha, I'm going to represent an undergraduate who's my honors student, who also happens to be the president of the college Republicans chapter. And so you know the Dick Cheney thing was canceled. It was scheduled originally for the Stafford Auditorium, and then your office or some changed it to Bailey Hall.
Yeah, you know what?
And
I just
Bailey Hall is booked. So
yeah.
Their problem looking at this is that
So let me tell you what I know about this. So on Friday, while we were having the board meeting, Joanne DiStefano came to me and told me that there had been some snafu involving the scheduling. It was apparently done by the police. The answer is, I don't know the details. We are aware of the situation. We're trying to address it. It didn't come out. I mean, I'm not saying it's not mine, but I don't know any more details about it. We're trying to.
I just relay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was very unfortunate that it got delayed, and then I don't know what happened. But I know there's an issue and we're trying to get it resolved. Thank you, Richard.
Okay.
I have about one more minute because I got to get somewhere else.
I think that I don't have anyone else on the speakers list, so I guess we finish.
All right. Let me, again, I'm serious. I don't think that it will take us that long to change the JA process, but the clock is ticking.
Yeah.
We are ready to work, so
yeah.
Please.
We'll reach out.
Please.
We'll reach out instead of.
Yeah, Mary Opperman is like good to go and make work with you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Victoria.
So now we'll go back into discussion on UAR 12. So I've got to pull my computer up again. Fire it up. I think Ian.
Yeah.
Thanks for spending your time this evening. Oh, appreciate that.
Yeah, so I guess at this point, just table resolution 12 and move on to resolution.
Motion to table resolution 12 so we can move on to introduce resolution 13.
Okay.
Second. Quick question.
So the motion has been, is there a second on the motion?
I second.
There's a second. Okay. If on motions to table, they're not discussable. So we have to.
Or can I withdraw?
Yeah, you can withdraw.
Okay, I'll withdraw it so you can ask your question.
Yeah.
I have a question, just a quick one, on a trial period in Willowspring. What's the purpose of that trial period? And what will happen if it's successful? And how does a successful trial look like?
Well, first of all, I've picked Willard Trade Hall since that is the undergraduate student union. Mm-hmm. So if there is going to be any building that we designate, or in the specifically picking the fourth floor, that's the main floor where students gather or undergrads gather. And so it's kind of seeing like, it's kind of forward thinking in that, like, if there were a building with gender neutral bathrooms and only gender neutral bathrooms, what that might look like and how might people interact or how people might feel.
So what are you measuring though with the trial period? Just, are you going to have like a survey with that and like?
I suppose there should be a survey.
Okay. So I think that should be made a little clearer.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. So did you want to make a motion to table?
Yeah, I would like
second.
there's been a second. Is there any dissent to tabling? Seeing no dissent, the resolution is tabled. Ian, thank you very much for being here. You're welcome to stay.
I'm actually
for the resolution.
Yeah. Is that okay? Look at that. All right, then we will go.
Thank
you're
you.
Definitely welcome to stay. So we'll
thank you for
right into the Risley,
yeah.
Risley Crosswalk, UA Resolution 13. Yeah. So everyone can just pull it up. All right. Ian, you have the floor.
Okay, so this also started off in the Student Assembly Infrastructure Fund Commission. And it was submitted by two students, with no connections to the student assembly. One lived in Risley, one just likes to eat there. And they were concerned about the lack of a crosswalk there, since there's two bus stops, a dining hall, and dorms on both sides. And this has been an issue submitted to the infrastructure fund in the past. And in the past, responses from campus planning have been that it will be figured out with the master housing plan, essentially just kind of saying that will be dealt with potentially like 5 years down the road. And whether or not anything kind of comes out of this resolution, we wanted a resolution so that we at least got an official university response about that. Yeah.
Okay, I don't have anyone on the speakers list.
We have Matt.
I have Matt, sorry.
So, of course. So, I just can't believe you're still here reservation. But first off, thank you. I guess I was also telling you this before the meeting. 3 years ago, the UA did a resolution about bicycle and pedestrian safety with the Bicycle and Pedestrian Safety Task Force Working Group something, which is under Bridget Brady. I've actually been actually trying to get Bridget Brady on the agenda for a while. I know we've been very booked. But in terms of, I know we were looking at that, and when speaking with her, we did it 3 years ago. We had an update 2 years ago in the fall about how they try and look at crosswalks. I know at the time I actually sponsored the resolution because we were looking at a crosswalk on West Campus near mm-hmm. Noyes going over near near Fraternity Row. And the response was, oh, we'll look at it. We should hopefully have it done in a year or two. And that was a year or two ago. So I think this is a great resolution. I think it's just good to check in and see where that working group is going. I know at the time we proposed the creation of one. I said, oh, there already is one. But it's it's a very low profile group to try and almost make sure that they're doing their job and that this is on their agenda. Because there's a certain point, I know when you're dealing with the roads on campus, you have to deal with state roads, county roads, and Cornell roads, which makes certain things more difficult than others. But there's no reason this can't, in essence, as President Pollock just said, we can certainly say this is on our priority list because it has been on our priority list, and there's no reason for things to drag on for, frankly, going on 3, 4, 5 years. Thank you.
Thank you.
Marty.
Yeah, sorry, I keep having opinions about things. What I wanted to say is that this was brought up at the most recent campus planning committee meeting, this particular crosswalk. And there was a discussion that it was folded into, or there was not the discussion, there was nothing that was substantive said about it except that there's a general survey being done of traffic, especially because of the planning of North Campus expansion, which is going to be extensive. And there will be a transportation study, a walking and, you know, perambulating study and everything else done as a part of that process. My point in saying that is not that this is not an important one to pass, and I would recommend that we pass it, but that if we want to get engaged, you know, there could be more than just this old guy sitting at the campus planning committee saying, you know, gee, it would be good to have a crosswalk at RISD or plan these things. Some of you guys can get a little more engaged in actually the process of these bigger issues in which this is just one small unit. So I guess I'm trying to recruit people to be more active in those university-wide committee positions. And that will add a little bit more to our purchase in the university governance, you know, shared governance system, if we see ourselves going, you know, finding their way into that. So my point in saying that is that I think this is a no-brainer. Heck, and in fact, I advocate that we just go out and paint them, as paint the darn thing ourselves. But the fact is that the whole of, East Avenue, right? East Avenue is a nightmare for pedestrians crossing. And it's because there's not any good lighting in it, there's not enough serious, and there's a lot of traffic that goes across it. This is just an extension of East Avenue, and it doesn't make sense. You know, we could maybe the next resolution should say, and we thoroughly believe that within the next year there should be a major renovation for safety purposes and transportation purposes of the entire East Avenue corridor. But I wouldn't vote for this, and I'm very much for it.
Okay. I don't have the Matt, did you want to speak on it?
I was going to second that. So I'm going to say, I think we have Bridget Brady coming. So if she's coming and she's the director of transportation, I'd want to talk to her about this and get her take. I can also send you the old UA resolution in response.
Okay, thank you.
So, well, never mind. I raised my placard.
Okay, so then there's a motion to table the resolution. Is there a second? There's a second. Is there any dissent to tabling the resolution?
Yes, I dissent.
There's dissent to tabling the resolution. Then we have to vote, actually.
Have to vote on what?
Okay, I withdraw my motion.
Tabling.
Okay.
Wyatt, what do you want to do?
I simply want to say that we should pass this. Just do it. I mean, why not? I mean, just send it to them, and they can come back and say. I mean, Bridget Brady may want to say something about it, but she can't say anything more than was said in the campus planning committee, which is there's a major transportation study going on around this area, and we are thinking about putting crosswalks and making things safe here and safe there. But there could be an simple interim thing that says, put a crosswalk in front of Risley, for gosh sakes.
Okay.
So that's my argument. I'm sorry. It's a little
No, that's fine. Ellis and then Richard.
I should point out, anybody who drives there in the morning knows there's already a de facto crosswalk there, unless you want to run people over. So, you know, I agree with Marty. You know, in the middle of the night, you get a can of paint, you draw some lines, nobody would know the difference because it was going to say it wasn't there. And now you have a crosswalk. So I agree, we should just vote for it.
Okay, Richard?
I think we should pass it.
Okay. Yeah, so there has to be a motion, otherwise I'm just going to go down the speakers list. Matt?
I understand that the expediency, the assembly traditionally, we generally wait things once they're introduced, we give them a meeting to percolate. Again, we did a resolution this 2 years or 3 years ago. I'd like to at least make sure we have something on that. Personally, unless it's urgent, I stand by the belief that it's better to let it be public and let it sit for 2 weeks unless it is urgent, but it seems like the assembly may be thinking against that. But I personally believe it's important to give it time, especially if Bridget Brady is in our imminent agenda, to have it here instead of sitting on her desk and saying, oh, by the way, then come talk about it. But that is just my take.
Joe.
It's a crosswalk. I don't think it's that big of a deal. Also, it was on the agenda last meeting, so we all knew about it. So, a motion to call the question.
Second. There's been a motion to call the question. There's a second. Is there any dissent to calling the question?
Has it been proposed? The resolution's been proposed,
yes.
And seconded?
Yes.
Or the question has been proposed and seconded?
Yeah. The question has been. This is just on. Should we even vote?
Okay, great.
Yeah. So, is there any dissent to voting? All right, seeing no dissent to voting, we will vote. If you are in favor of UA Resolution 13, Risley Crosswalk Resolution, we should work on the name, whatever. Then raise your hand. Did we add someone?
Yes, sir, I walked
in.
Yeah.
Okay.
I am here now.
Surprise. Yeah, right. Okay, is there anyone opposed? And then is there anyone who'd like to abstain? Okay, by a vote of 13-0-1, the resolution passes. Congratulations, Ian. All right, so we will now move on. to resolution 14.
I would like to motion to table this resolution because Chris indicated to me that he wants to make some big changes to it, but he's not here today. He wants to do it at the next meeting.
Second. Okay, so any dissent to tabling it? Seeing no dissent to tabling it, then we will move into everything else that isn't a resolution on the agenda that we've been neglecting. Can I actually extend the meeting by 5 minutes?
Motion to extend by 5 minutes and just try and get through some reports because they haven't happened.
Yeah.
For like months.
And yeah, so we're at 11 members present if Charlie and Bob leave. So please, if you can stay. If not, I understand. So committee reports, Elena.
So I sent an email out Tuesday asking for you to send me your opinions about the consensual relationship policy and kind of get us how we should move forward in terms of relating our opinions about it. So far, I have received one opinion. I'm going to send a reminder out, but I would like to have almost everybody by next Friday. So thank you.
And so Codes and Judicial Committee, Matt.
Thank you. We've had the working group's been very busy. It's had two forums. The working group's meeting weekly along with the committee at this point. Committee's been meeting weekly. We've had a lot going on. We're looking at a series of code changes that are housekeeping. We are looking at a larger change to the code. Talking with committee members, it looks like we might go about the idea of reorganizing the code to, in essence, make sense to, because right now the infractions are in three or four different places, to streamline it. And then after that, you have a better idea of what may be duplicative. We're looking at that. JCC search is ongoing. Actually, I'll be departing very momentarily to go to that. We have a JCC candidate, hopefully by our next meeting. Also, University Hearing Review Board applications are open. They've been open for about a week and a half. The office assemblies through some clerics, they were delayed in doing so, which is regrettable. They're open through this Friday. I have heard through some various sources that professional student participation is lacking. I have sent emails to some of my graduate professional colleagues to try and help that. I have also submitted a formal request to the office assemblies to have an update upon the status and how many applications we received. I haven't received a response. I hope I will receive one shortly. If not, I will. Well, in that case, I'd make a motion to, under the University Assembly's authority to compel information, a motion to request that information for the CJC then.
We had to do it a couple years ago.
So anyway, so I'll make that motion. I move that the assembly request the office assemblies formally provide the information to the CJC, still being that we can target our efforts for this lacking on a group.
Second.
Information on the number of UHRV applicants per constituency to the Codes and Judicial Committee.
Right.
Okay, that's the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, so we'll move into discussion on that motion.
Call a question.
I'm just trying to understand why would the Office of Assemblies not respond to a request for information?
That's an excellent question. That's an excellent question.
You have to ask them.
But recognizing that the Office of Assemblies is two people.
Yeah.
I can write some context.
Can we give them a benefit of the doubt on
this? No, absolutely. Two years ago, we requested a similar update, and we were told that information is confidential. And on the grounds that they don't want us influencing the outcome of who applies. Our contention was we don't want to know who applies. We want to know how many members per constituency. Traditionally, the employees are our weakest constituency, so we will, in essence, during the last period of applications, tailor outreach to that. Last year, we had to, unfortunately, push again to get the information. This year, unfortunately, I had requested it yesterday. I was told that the GPSA was informed from the office that their constituency was lacking, but the CJC in general would like this information to help us tailor our outreach. The reason I asked for the motion is that, being that the applications go Friday, if the office assembly says we don't want to do it, the UA has the ability to formally request it, and I would really just prefer they give us the information. But if they don't, a request from the university assembly formally is in essence a stopgap that we will get the information. I'd prefer to do it informally, and I traditionally that's why I ask. But if we don't have a response, considering applications close Friday, I'm not really sure. I don't want it to become mooted because the application is closed before we get the update.
Yes. Question. So there's a motion to move the question. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a second. Is there any dissent to voting on Matt's request? Okay, seeing no dissent to voting on it, is there any dissent to it in general? Okay, seeing no dissent, then it's been approved unanimously. You finished with your committee report.
I am, thank you. I have much more details, but we're at no cost of time. Shoot me an email, we'll set the time to meet and talk. I have to run. I think we're going to this form.
Yeah. Okay, no, we're at 11, so. So we'll be at 11 if he leaves.
I have to leave.
So then, then if you leave, we'll lose.
So quickly, I can wait a minute.
Okay, so campus welfare committee, Joe Anderson.
Hi, friends. Update on tobacco referendum. In consultation with Cornell Health, we found the question was not properly planned because there is a gap in authority with the question. It does not cover electronic cigarettes, which is a massive issue now because of their recent trend in popularity. We're going to be looking at that and kind of amending that question because we have to, because of the fact that when we do that, it actually would help us and not target employees as much as it does right now, so that it's more. So we have to pull back again. Also, the Office of Assembly said that logistically that this is a night, like they don't have the logistic bandwidth ready to do so because of the fact that they're in the SA elections right now and that they're doing the trustee elections and there's then no good time for the rest of the semester, even though I thought we planned this early events, whatever, it's fine. But we're working really closely with Cornell Health. Cornell Health is fully in the fold, and they actually suggested that we wait until the next semester as well. So there's a lot of people who are like, you just need to hold off one more time. So everyone's now talking together. Cornell Health is totally on board. We're fixing the question. We're getting a lot more information through because Cornell Health is sending a survey about tobacco smoke, about tobacco habits on campus. So we're gonna have a better question. We're gonna have better targeted outreach. Overall, the process is improving significantly with this being delayed. So we're really happy about that. So you'll expect to see a resolution that amends the original referendum question to really be able to capture this whole entire essence that was, you know, not brought to the attention last year.
As Chris isn't here, unfortunately, to provide the committee update, so we'll just go into assembly reports.
Let's just adjourn.
Okay,
let's just move the adjournment.
All right. Cool. The motion. Is there any dissent to adjournment? No. Okay.
Is there
That's fine.
Oh, the printing, yes. It would almost seem like resolutions, like our resolutions are one paper double sided. You may have shorter resolutions.
I did get an email about that.
Some of that looks like there we might one pager, like it's almost like it's just
playing a little more.
I understand that one of her. I mean, I'm in that she's looking.
Yeah.
I think.
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
It'll be terrible.
I've been here for too long. Pleasure meeting you. Welcome aboard. It's been great. If you have any questions, feel free to ask. I'm happy to tell you to the assembly and to the blue face. Or you go to sleep, because people do that in the morning. But if you're interested, let me know.